listening to the Forza Podcast with your host, Marsh.
Good afternoon, Canes fans. It is the Forza Podcast. It is Friday, November 13th. It is Virginia Tech Eve. As always, I am joined by my wonderful producer and co-host, Jordan Nelson. It is Friday, Jordan. How are we feeling?
Doing pretty good, man. I'm excited for this game. I think I have a different prediction than most Canes fans for it, but I think it's going to be a good one. Another nail biter, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'll say it right now. I haven't decided yet on a prediction. I'm going to pray throughout the show, but I am nervous. I will not lie. Virginia Tech always scares me. They always play us tough. We've talked about it since we started this show that, you know, besides FSU and UF, Virginia Tech is really that next rival for us. Yeah. And so, this is always a close game. I feel like Virginia Tech's a well-coached team. They're not the old Frank Beamer Hokies that we used to know and hate, but there's still hatred in our heart for them. But we have a big show for you guys today. We got Craig Smith coming on first from State of the U, and then our good friend Gabby Arutia will be joining us after. So what do you say? Let's talk to him about AB, and then let's get Craig on the show.
Yeah, man. So, as always, you guys hear it every week, but make sure you're checking out Stickers by AB. He's a good friend of ours. And if you use the discount code FORSUP, that's the number 4, SUP, you'll get 15% off any of the stickers that you purchase from him. He's helping us out with our merch when it finally drops. And then we're partnered in him with a giveaway. So we're in the middle of doing that. I'll repost the tweet tonight. But if you need to be following the Fours Up account and the Stickers by AB account, and then if you like and retweet that tweet, then and also tag a friend, you'll be eligible for a sticker giveaway. So we'll probably be choosing someone tomorrow before the game and announcing it on Twitter, and then we'll send you some cool stickers.
Cool. Yeah, make sure to check out AB. He's a homie, and so
yeah,
and
he's good.
Great work as well. So yeah, really, really like those stickers. So let's get our first guest on the line.
Cool.
Craig, what's going on, brother?
What's up, guys?
How you doing, man? You're live on Fours Up.
I'm good. What's going on?
Nothing much, man. So we now welcome on Craig Smith. He's a fellow writer at State of the U. Also does some work for the Dolphins for their blog. Thank you so much for coming on, man. We've been meaning to get you on the show for a while. That's my bad.
No, I'm excited about it, man. You guys are certainly moving up. I'm looking forward to talking. I know we didn't catch up at the Florida game last year, so I've definitely been wanting to talk with you guys. And we don't get this opportunity that often, so I'm looking forward to it.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. Okay, so Virginia Tech, Miami tomorrow. Virginia Tech comes into the game, 4-3 record. Their game last week against Liberty was one of the more wild finishes I think we've seen in college football. Bud Foster is gone. Frank Beamer is long gone. What stands out to you at first about this Virginia Tech team? Because they're not that defensive squad that we're used to seeing from a Virginia Tech program.
Man, I guess it's you hit on it first, and that's the thing that really when you look at Virginia Tech this year giving up what they've given up. Granted, they were hit by COVID, as we know. They've had double digit guys out, I think, at least two games. But still, when you think Virginia Tech football for the past 20, 30 years, you think knock the snot out of you, hard hitting, top 10, top 20 type defense, 20-14 kind of games. This is, and what you're seeing now is a defense that's ranked, I think I read on State of the Union, they're ranked 94th as far as total yards. If you dig further into that, they're 74th in scoring, a little better, I think, in their red zone defense around 50, 60 something. But I mean, this is a team that just gives it up defensively. They're not very physical. They get the ball run down their throat. I think Liberty ran it about 50 times last week for around 250 yards, if I remember seeing that right. And they run out of a base 4-2-5, and really, I'm a little surprised they haven't gone heavier from what I've watched, because I just when you watch them play, the limited amount I've watched them play this year, they've gotten knocked off the ball, and that is the exact opposite of what you would expect to see from a Bud Foster Virginia Tech defense. So it's really strange to see. But that's what happens in college football with the changing of the tides and programs going up and down and changing their identities and what they look like. And I think that as far as what's the most glaring thing to me, far and away, that, you know, the Tech's downfall on the defensive end of the ball.
Yeah. I mean, because I'm looking at it right now. They gave up 249 yards last week against Liberty.
249, yeah.
Yeah, they're also 11th in the ACC when it comes to pass defense. And so, you know, given what the Canes did on offense last week, do you see Miami being able to move the ball in a similar way?
I do. I think that it's going to be interesting to see which way Rhett Lashley and wants to attack this defense, because, you know, and I've written about this on my Monday musings, is the past couple weeks is Miami's own problems creating a push with their front five just running the football out of their base sets. I mean, it's we know the problem. The problem has been 2.3 yards per carry against Pitt and 2.5 against Virginia, even taking out struggling Cam Harris from the equation. That's their rushing output in those two games without him, without Harris out of the equation. That's terrible. That's absolutely awful. And it's no doubt coincided with lighting a fire underneath Miami's wide receivers as well. So that pickup, especially the production from Mike Carley, has kind of saved them. Which way will they go this week? Will they try to open up the game on the ground and air it out and kind of stretch the defense that way and open it up? I think it may depend a little bit on game flow. If they give up a touchdown and go down 7-0, you may see them open up a little bit more. But if they get the ball first, you know, I would expect them to run their base offense and test that Tech defensive front. Certainly, you know, if let's face it, I mean, as much as we want to talk X's and O's, we're talking about a team as talented as the Liberty Flames was able to go run down the field and run for 250 yards. So if Miami's front five can't line up and get at least a couple of first downs and show a little physicality, then I don't care how well we throw the ball. That's concerning.
Yeah. I'm going to give a take or an opinion, and Craig, I want you to tell me your thoughts on it. I'm actually really worried about this matchup for us. And you kind of pointed as to why is, you know, Virginia Tech's running defense is really bad, but we've struggled to generate any kind of push in the last few weeks in the run game. I mean, really, the only guy that's done anything significant in the run game is De'Aaron King, and those are usually on broken plays as opposed to designed quarterback runs, typically speaking. So, I mean, I'm just worried about this, man. I'm not expecting a loss, but I'm actually expecting the same type of shootout that we saw last week. And that I expect our defense to give up huge numbers to Virginia Tech's rushing attack, and specifically to their quarterback. And but, you know, I think we'll put up numbers as well, man. But it's a scary game to me. I'm not looking at this thinking, you know, like my mouth isn't watering thing about their bad defense, because I think they're thinking that exact same thing. Is they're thinking, you know, we have the third ranked offense in the ACC. We have one of the best rushing attacks in all of college football. And Miami's defense can be soft up the middle and struggles horizontally. So we're going to take advantage of that all day.
Well, you know, I think a lot of it depends in really this, you know, we try to prognosticate. We try to figure out, you know, how the stats look like that'll play out. I think game flow depends so much, and situational football depends so much on how teams respond, what their offensive philosophies are, and how you take advantage of it. So, you know, I think if Miami struggles to run the football, which I have the same concern as you, you know, I just, you know, that Louisville game, second half UAB game, you know, we saw some, obviously the FSU game, dear goodness, but, you know, we saw a right side of that Miami offensive line behind Jared Williams, you know, that was just dominant for a short period of time. That's disappeared all the way across the line. So, you know, I share that concern. But, you know, it's funny. I think I'm trying to remember who I was tweeting with. I think I was tweeting with Stephen Cheatham about this. And, you know, that's another thing. We all have these interactions, all of us on Twitter daily, but it's nice to be able to sit down and talk about this. Mm-hmm. He was concerned about this game being a toss-up as well. But, you know, I go back to the same thing, and that's who has the best player on the field for both teams? Unquestionably, it's the Miami Hurricanes with De'Aaron King. Not even close.
Yep.
And one thing that we've seen – And you hit on it, and I agree. I think it's a good point, is when you look at Derek King, I think a lot of fans, you know, is trying to gauge what people feel in relation to what he can do. I think we've seen a lot as far as his arm lately, and I think it's been great. Don't get me wrong. Obviously, you can't complain anything about his arm the past couple games. But, you know, I think a lot of the hype coming in was his willingness and what he could do, just, you know, constantly running the ball on the ground. I feel like Rhett Lashley has really held off on what he, you know, at least as far as anything's been directed. I don't feel like Derek King has really run as much as, honestly, me personally, I expected him to this year. I feel like there's been opportunities for him to pull it in on those RPOs and take it wide. And I'm kind of curious to see if maybe we'll start to see a little bit more out of that, albeit by design or out of necessity. Because as you mentioned, when he hits those plays, he generates the plays that really have swung some games. When Miami was down against NC State, that run really kind of helped turn them around later on the first half. So I'm concerned, obviously, as you, that with Miami's run game, as we've all talked about. But, you know, I think that King can give them the spark to turn this into a shootout. And that's to say nothing about Miami's defense either, because, you know, what Hurd and Hooker can do as far as with that RPO and the way they've designed some things this year. I mean, you're talking about some serious assignment football for this defense. And that's the one thing that concerns me the most about this game is how is just kind of how multiple the looks are that Virginia Tech gives you on as far as your defense against our offense. And that's what worries me the most. I think Miami's going to get theirs. I'm just concerned about how well Miami's defense is going to respond and play assignment football this tomorrow.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that's what a lot of people are concerned about, especially after giving up 41 points to an NC State team with a backup quarterback. But, you know, Khalil Herbert may be out, or, you know, he's going to be limited tomorrow because he got injured against Liberty last week. How do you see the Virginia Tech offense looking without, you know, arguably their best player, you know, at the running back position? Obviously Hooker is a, you know, he's a big bastard for a quarterback, and he can move and he can sling it as well. So how do you see the Virginia Tech offense doing possibly without Herbert or with a limited Herbert?
Well, I think really it's going to come down to how well, as I mentioned, how well Miami can make the right read on early downs, in the RPOs. You know, going back to State of the U, I thought Justin DeTavia did a great job showing just kind of the mobility that in the multiple looks that Virginia Tech can give you just straight out of the backfield with, you know, they get creative. They'll pull a guard and they'll run a backside counter where they fake the handoff to the running back. Everybody goes to the running back. The guard pulled. It looks like it's your sure run. Hooker will pull it back and keep it. And it just completely okey-dokes the defense. And that's where it comes down to assignment football, because they get really good at kind of the deception with that. So I thought that was a good example by Justin. And that's what concerns me, because Miami's defense the past few weeks is just, aside from the penalties and the sloppy play, they just haven't played good assignment football. And that comes down to stopping the run and your run fits. And they've been, quite frankly, not good at all at that. So, yeah. You know, I really think it starts with being able to make that proper read at the line. And for Bradley Jennings and for Zach McLeod, they're going to have to hit their run fits as well, because, you know, if they can't stop these seven plays, 80-yard drives, you know, you just might as well forget about it. And it all starts with being able to slow down Hooker on early downs, you know, make him, force him to give the ball up and to be able to play assignment football. Otherwise, you know, forget about it. And that's to say nothing about what Virginia Tech's big play wide receivers down the field, because James Mitchell, Tavion Robinson, and Trey Turner, I mean, they've got three guys that are all averaging close to 15 yards or more per catch, which is even more than what Miami's guys have been generating this year. So, you know, if you don't stop the run, then you just got to pick your poison there.
So we've talked a little bit about, you know, our rushing offense struggling to get a push at the line. And then, you know, we've talked about our run defense going up against that Virginia Tech rushing attack. I'm curious as to what you find a bigger concern for this game. Are you more worried about our run offense being able to generate, you know, some production, or are you more worried about us stopping their run offense? So I guess, are you worried about our run offense or our run defense?
Man, that's a great question. That is an excellent question, because my answer to that question is yes. I'm very much worried about. I'm very much worried about both.
I have us on upset alert, man, for that exact reason. Like that's my answer too, is yes.
Like, I still think, as far as I think Miami is more dynamic and has more playmakers on the offensive side of the ball. Stats be damned, given the fact that their guys are averaging more downfield. I still think I'm more worried, honestly, about us being able to stop them with the game on the line. Let's say that Virginia Tech is driving to win the game and we're up by 4 points, or we're down by 4 points and we're driving to win the game. I feel like either team's going to score. So in that respect, if it's a close game and I have to put it down in our offense or I have to put it down in our defense, I'll give it to our offense 20 times every day and 50 times on Sunday. I am very that much worried about our defense right now. So I would say, in that respect, I'm more worried about our rushing attack, our ability to not just stop out of a traditional, you know, run formation or I formation or anything else, just the physicality of it. Right now, I'm just worried about our ability to play assignment football, as I've said, to make the right reads. So I would say, if you put a gun to my head right now, I'd say a run defense. I'm very worried about the defense.
So
so sorry to cut you off, Jordan. I want to ask you a question. Through the first three quarters last Friday, our defense was just absolutely torched. And then in the fourth quarter, we give up 6 yards on 8 plays to NC State's offense. Do you think Manny called the defensive plays in the fourth quarter, or do you think that was still Blake Baker?
You know, I think it's interesting, because, you know, that's kind of been bandied about. No one's really leaked that one out, even the beat writers. But I think it certainly begs the question, what gave? Because right now I think that there's a lot of questions about Blake Baker's ability to, put his players in the best position to win. So it wouldn't surprise me at all. Yeah. If he kind of had to come to Jesus moment with him in the locker room at halftime. But again, I do think a lot of that had to do. I think Miami played better and they made the play when they had to, especially on the last drive to win the game. But I think a lot of it comes down to game situations again. For NC State had the lead. When you have the lead, you can get a little bit lax mentally, you know, with attention and everything else. I mean, they were playing with a 10-point lead for the last, I don't know, the vast majority of the fourth quarter. So I honestly think that there could have, you know, give credit to Miami. They made the plays when they had to. They got the interception when they had to seal the game. They forced the punt when they needed it. But still, I think, you know, one great quarter of football, I don't know how much of that was change as well as focus and in game flow as well. But, that certainly doesn't alleviate the concern from the past few games.
Yeah, and to that point, I mean, I don't want to rain on the parade, but you guys know how I am. I mean, we were playing against, a third-string quarterback, and they were on a three-game losing streak. So I really don't want to celebrate too much that we finally played how we should on defense against that kind of team, right?
Let's face it. Third-string quarterbacks are first-team Pro Bowlers against our defense in the past few years. So
and that's what I'm saying is, like, you know, in the fourth quarter we finally made him look like a backup, and that's what we should have, man. Like that's kind of been a theme this whole year. I know we're like doing a bend don't break thing. I don't know if it's on purpose or not, but we are getting bent over by these backup quarterbacks consistently, and it's really frustrating.
Well, you know, I'll tell you this. What I would love to see is, you know, if you're starting off, if your defense is constantly, you know, going the straight backwards surrender mode into field goal range, and it's basically Sherman's march to the sea by the opposition, I want to see more aggressiveness. I want to see more blitzes. I want to see more attacking the quarterback, because if they score, who the hell cares? Because they're going to score anyways. You're going to force them back to an 8-yard loss. Now, that's what you got to have. I would just like to see a little bit, maybe a little bit more aggressiveness.
I think that is kind of what feels different between the Blake defense and the Manny defense, right? Is like Manny had kind of this bend don't break thing too, but he was sending the dogs on every single play while he, you know, would let the other team back him into field goal range, right? But he was forcing turnovers because of the aggressiveness, like you just said. Whereas it feels like now we're still letting guys march us back into field goal range almost every drive. but we're not, you know, we're not forcing turnovers. We're not having that aggressive. I mean, it's exactly like what you said. I'm just trying to, you know, restate it.
Yeah, I think that Manny has been one of the most aggressive defensive coordinators that we've seen in a long time. And I think it certainly has paid dividends because turnovers are basically like, well, not being touchdowns for defense. I mean, their impact game plays like touchdowns. And so sacks are the same way for, you know, batted balls on third down from rushing defenders, forcing a quarterback to a mistake. I mean, that's what pressure does. And I just feel like if you're getting pushed backwards, you have to attack. And I don't feel like I feel like I've had my hands up more this year than ever saying, why aren't we doing something about this? So, you know, it'll be interesting to see because, you know, Hooker's a guy, he gets out, look out. But he's also a guy that can throw the ball very well if you give him time back there to make the right read, as evidenced by his receivers, you know, big play ability and the fact that he's quite accurate. He was 21 of 27 last week, so you can't sit back there. I think they need to be a little bit more aggressive and play, mix it up a little bit more, give some more man blitz looks and see if you can make an impact play happen. We haven't seen the chain as much as we should this year, obviously.
Yeah,
I mean, we're ninth in the ACC in turnovers this year, which is just preposterous. Awful. Like one in the last three games, and you know the NC State game, it came at the most important time, but still, that was our only one of the game. And it's just very frustrating to see. So one of my last questions for you is, you know, this is obviously, you know, a lot of people don't consider when we talk rivals for Miami, you know, it's usually Florida State, UF. Jordan and I, you know, we strongly consider Virginia Tech a rival for Miami. And so there's been some classic Miami-Virginia Tech games. You know, the Willis McGahee 6 touchdowns, the 2005 win up in Blacksburg. Which Miami-Vaught Tech game stands out to you the most when you look at this this rivalry?
Man, I'm glad you asked that question. And I love this rivalry, first of all, because – I went to high school in East Tennessee. I went right up into the Tri-Cities area, right near Dade City, Virginia. I lived about 10, 15 minutes from the state line. So going to Miami was certainly a sea change experience for me because the areas could not be any different. I'm telling you, it is like it's hard to even put into words. So I think rivalries, you know, when you talk about Florida State, Miami, you talk about Florida State and Georgia, Georgia Tech, whatever you see. You see, you know, a lot of similarities between the areas. These two areas could not be more dissimilar. And I think that's so interesting for the rivalry. It's so weird. They've had some great games. So I love this rivalry. I think it's one of the more underrated rivalries that we have. As far as games itself, man, I tell you what, I 2002, the 6-touchdown Willis McGahee game, the only game all year I missed because I had law school finals coming up. I couldn't go to it. That one was amazing. I wish I could have said I saw that game. Getting ready the fall before I went to Miami in 2000 when it was one, you know, when Miami, Virginia Tech were, I think they were 1-2, I think, or it was 1-3. I don't remember beating Michael Vick and completing the, I think it was 2-3 or 4. We were 3 or 4 because that year we beat number 1 Florida State. We beat number 2 Virginia Tech and Michael Vick, even though Vick was banged up, and we just blew them out. We beat their ass. So that game really stuck out to me because I think it really kind of gave, you know, that added a satisfaction to what turned out to be an amazing year that we, you know, where we were robbed, but still we were clearly the best team of the year. So I think just beating up on Vick the way we did that year to kind of send him out after, you know, the hell that he gave us for the previous couple of years, that one really sticks out to me as one of my favorite games, even though it wasn't close. I mean, I'm glad it wasn't close. It was awesome.
Perfect.
Yeah, man. Well, so before we have you take off, let's hear a score prediction for tomorrow.
You know, I wrote about it Monday Musings. I gave my prediction like I do every week on State of the U. I've got Miami winning by about a touchdown. I think that despite my, you know, our shared concerns, I think we're on the same page in that regard as far as being able to just line up and run the ball.
Yep.
King flipped a switch last week. I think Virginia Tech's going to have a hell of a time. The wide receivers are playing with a ton of confidence. Will Mallory is just a touchdown machine right now. He's kind of that X factor in the red zone, and we've got the best trio of running backs in the country, and I think we're starting to see more and more of them. I'm a big Cam Harris fan, but, I mean, I'm loving that Knighton and Chain are getting on the field and they're eating. So I think we just have too many weapons. I think we struggle to stop them, as we talked about. I've got Miami winning around a score of 45-37, I hope.
All right. We'll take it, man. That's a high-scoring one, man. Yeah. Just last year was 42-35, so.
Mm-hmm. That's actually not too far off of what I had. And you know, I want to echo all your points, but I think last week we showed a certain level of maturity that it's like we can put those games away. You know, like mm-hmm. we can have the confidence that when we're down by 10 in the fourth quarter, it's like we got this under control. We're moving the ball. We can get the stop when we need it. I think we'll see a very similar vibe tomorrow.
Yeah. And on that point, the last thing I want to say is, last week, it's you know, we get screwed out of the touchdown. We have to kick the field goal. We're down by 4 points. We lose that game in previous years, and we point to that and absolutely. Say, we got screwed. We do not go down and get that game-winning touchdown. That was huge, and that is in large part because of the skills of De'Arik King and the confidence that this team has in him. I really believe that. I think that a quarterback like that makes all the difference in an 8-3, 7-4 team, and hopefully what we can do this year. So,
absolutely, man. Absolutely. That was a season-changing drive, I believe, or just a season-changing quarter. But Craig, thank you so much, man. We need to have you on again because this was a lot of fun.
I appreciate it, guys. Thanks a lot.
Absolutely, brother. Yeah, check out his work on State of the U, and anywhere else that they can find your work, Craig?
Just on State of the U for the Canes. I'm writing about the Dolphins every week on the Finsider.
Perfect. Perfect. All righty, Craig. You have a good one, man.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks. See ya. Perfect. Dude, Craig was an awesome guest, man.
Yeah, that was awesome. Okay, is our next guest ready?
I forgot to message him, but let's give him a call.
Gabby, yeah, what's up, bro? What's going on, guys?
Nothing much, man. Nothing much. How you been?
I'm good, man. I'm good. It's been at Marsh. I can officially say, as you know, it's been very rainy. The weather has not been very pleasant down here, so I've been inside a lot. But otherwise, I definitely can't complain.
Bro, it's been awful. Like, today is literally the first nice day that we've had since I moved here. So that's been nice. Before we talk football, I'm sure you've seen on Twitter, and I hope you're proud of me. I'm watching the Harry Potter movies for the first time.
I'm very proud of you. It took you long enough, but I'm definitely glad you're coming around.
Yeah, and I watched Prisoner of Azkaban yesterday. I did not like that, but Goblet of Fire, that movie slaps.
Yeah, that's actually the book I'm reading right now. I flew through 1 through 3. I've watched the movies before, admittedly, but that was a long time ago. So I'm giving the books a chance. And I'm like, I would say probably a little bit over like a quarter of the way done with Goblet of Fire. But it's a huge book. It's like an 800-page book. And so that's the one I'm kind of grinding through right now. So my memory isn't super fresh on what happens there. So no spoilers.
No, yeah. Gabby always sends me a Snapchat when he finishes the book. And I always feel, like a loser because I don't read.
You haven't read them, Marsh?
No, you know what? I've read the Lord of the Rings books, but I have not read Harry Potter. Have you, Jordan? Okay.
Yeah. So I read all of them when I was younger, and then I've seen all the movies, a few times. I'm like, I like Harry Potter. I wouldn't say it's like a franchise that I geek out about. But I know the story well and all that kind of stuff.
I'm getting into it. I think Goblet of Fire may have flipped me.
It's good, dude. It is good, and I definitely recommend the books over the movies. I'm of the opinion that the books were really good, and the movies were like, they were meh to good. Like once Hermione gets really hot, then they're great. But
I love it. Case, Gabby, first things first, big news in recruiting this week. Tim Burns decommits from Miami, 3-star cornerback out of Miami Northwestern. Obviously, we just sent out an offer to Khalil Anderson. Is that right?
Yeah. So they just dished out an offer to Khalil Anderson. Andrew Adams reported earlier in the week that like that was definitely going to be a possibility. Khalil Anderson is actually a guy that Clemson's kind of like testing the waters on. Like, they're kind of like inquiring, kind of seeing what's up there. It seems like cornerbacks are at a premium, like especially with the way you just watch the way football's going and you see how much passing's done. And, pass rushers and guys that can help break up passes are really at a premium. So, it's definitely important to get guys like that in the class. I think Khalil Anderson's definitely a good one. He's definitely a guy that's kind of that might be more highly regarded than his ranking might suggest. And yeah, I think it's going to be very interesting. He's a Pitt commit, but yeah, you know, a lot of people are committed right now without seeing programs, but that's actually not the case for Khalil. He actually has been on campus, and Pat Narduzzi has been making him a priority for some time now. So it might not be as obvious of a flip opportunity as some might think, but I know Miami's definitely going to do their job and try.
Okay. Well, and so who are the other cornerback recruits that Miami could go after? Or do you think that, you know, we'll just kind of wait and see what the transfer portal brings us?
Yeah, I think there's definitely a couple high school guys that, you know, there's probably going to be conversations about. I do think the transfer portal is going to have to be one of those things where you kind of utilize it at the position, just because I'm not sure how Miami can kind of go into this next year with five scholarship cornerbacks. And, you know, obviously, like, I also feel like it's a pretty enticing opportunity, too, to tell a good transfer, as we expect there might be tons of them around the country. Like, hey, you know what? You know, you can come in here and compete with Al Blades and DJ Ivy. You know, like, none of these guys are really, like, high-caliber NFL prospects right now. Like, you might have an opportunity to play, potentially start. So I think there's definitely some you know, enticing opportunities there if you're one of those transfer guys. But as far as the high school guys go, you know, I feel like there's a couple different directions that they can go. Demaryius McGee out of the Panhandle area is a Tennessee commit that Miami was kind of in on before he committed to Tennessee. And, you know, like Steve Wiltfong has noted in the past, like, you know, the on-field production, like what teams are doing on Saturdays is going to matter more this year, because, you know, kids aren't going to be able to take visits. Kids aren't going to be able to, you know, do a lot of those things that they'd be able to do on a normal year. So, you know, if a program starts playing poorly, that might be the time to kind of get in there and kind of snag one of those, like, you know, maybe they're one of their top rated commits. I think that could be possible with Demaryius McGee out of that Panhandle area, the Tennessee commit. A guy I really like, honestly, that I've watched him play this year, or once in person and once on TV, is St. Thomas Aquinas cornerback Jaden McBurrows. He's a Michigan commit. You know, we're seeing what Michigan's doing right now. There's like chatter that Don Brown could potentially get the boot if Michigan kind of keeps going down this path. And I think Jaden McBurrows is a guy that, you know, I definitely would like. I feel like he's kind of built very much in like that Tim Burns like mold, but I do think he's a little bit more aggressive. I do think he's just honestly just a better player. And, you know, you can go back and watch that American Heritage St. Thomas Aquinas game, and you kind of see how physical he was there. When I watched him play, he was playing against Brandon Innes, who's the top number one rated receiver in that 2023 class. And honestly, I think he might be one of the pure top offensive players in the county, regardless of class. And, you know, he played really, really well. He more than held his own. He had two picks. One of them would have been a pick six, but, you know, there was a penalty on the opposite side of the field, and that ended up taking that away. So Jaden McBurrows is a guy I'm super impressed with. And then you can also go Charles Brantley. He's a Michigan State commit. Yeah, Michigan State commit out of Venice. I think he's someone that you could obviously like circle as maybe. And then you got Marvin Covington, who I think is a really, really good prospect. Yeah, I really, really like his tape. I think that this is a kid that, you know, just really just does it on Friday nights. You know, they've talked about in the past that they want guys that are, you know, just at the end of the day, able to play, like just able to just make things happen on Friday. And I think he's done that. You know, he played a DeSoto team a couple weeks ago that had three Power 5 wide receivers, including a guy in the 2023 class who they think might be a five-star potentially. I can't remember his name. I think it's Javonte Cook or something like that. But he's a nice player. Otherwise, it's a Texas Tech commit and an Arkansas commit. And, you know, Marvin Covington had two interceptions and two pass breakups. So, you know, this is a kid that really just makes it happen. He has really nice verified speed, like 10.84 or something like that, verified speed. So that's something else Miami likes. There's a lot of different directions that they can go. Whether they are able to actually get any of those guys to flip, or, you know, convince Covington that Miami is the place for him without him ever stepping foot on campus. That's something else that's an entirely different conversation, mm-hmm. But I think that's kind of what the board's sort of looking like right now until, you know, maybe a new name kind of pops up out of nowhere or out of somewhere that we're not really looking right now.
Yeah, well, before we, you know, move too far away from the Tim Burns situation, I do want to ask you about that a little bit. You know, playing detective on social media, you know, seeing comments that his friends and teammates have made, and, you know, fellow recruits, comments that he's made. I know comments from his parents, you know, across various social media platforms. It would appear that maybe we were the person who ended that relationship, you know, and you know, just like potentially the school telling him that we were going to go in a different direction, correct? And is that weird or is that normal to do that when it seems like we didn't have a backup plan in place? I find it a little strange to cut loose our only cornerback and then send out a bunch of offers to kids in this class. Like, that's just weird to me.
Yeah, no, definitely a strange circumstance. I feel like, you know, people have always kind of, like, I feel like people just casually talk about, oh, well, we got to drop this guy, we got to drop this guy, like on social media, I'm saying. People are saying, oh, and then it happens, and it's like, oh, man, like, you know, like, you know, I feel like there is an unfortunate reality with a lot of these situations. I wish I could take credit for this, but, you know, Andrew noted that, you know, Tim Burns committed to Miami at like back in the summer of 2019. And, you know, he's kind of stayed the same, you know, they probably took his commitment, probably hoping that he would grow a little bit. He hasn't really. So I think that at the end of the day, there is like, I guess a certain standard that Miami holds for that cornerback position. Like how many slot cornerbacks are you really going to take? You know, Tecori Couch is just a sophomore. And like, you know, you can have a couple of those guys, but you don't want to have too many of them. And I feel like Tecori Couch is kind of like that kind of moldish type of thing. And, you know, I just think it's definitely a weird situation. I don't want to say Miami doesn't have any backup plans, but I just think at the end of the day, there's just so much uncertainty right now. Yes. And they are kind of leaning on the fact that there is going to be a huge, huge transfer pool and that they're going to feel probably pretty good about the fact that they can land one of those guys. And, you know, with the fact that, you know, these guys haven't been able to hit the road or recruit or see these kids in person, a lot of these coaches are just going to say, hey, you know what, I'm going to roll the dice on a kid that actually has some college tape. I'm going to roll the dice on a kid that, you know, I've seen him make plays on Saturdays. I'm not going to take a kid. I'm not going to take a chance right now on a kid that, you know, at the end of the day, might need a year or two to develop before he even gets onto the field anyways. So I think the staff's trying to win. I think the staff's trying to make things happen maybe a little bit quicker than maybe like a Tim Burns situation might have. And that's not to say Tim Burns isn't a good player. I think he is. And I've got the chance to watch him twice. And no, he's not the perfect cornerback prospect. He's definitely a little small, but he's definitely got a little fight in him. And, you know, maybe if it's not Miami, I still think that he's going to be able to go to a program and play pretty well. You know, I still think that he has a bright future in front of him. I just don't think that the clearest path to playing quickly or right away is at Miami for him. And I think, you know, Miami ultimately at the end of the day needed to make a couple of decisions because they do have very limited spots in this class.
Yeah. And I completely agree with you. You know, I really like Burns as a kid and also as a player, but I think it would have taken a few years for him to see significant playing time. You've seen Miami Northwestern play, you know, like you said, twice this year. You're always at Traz Powell. And I'm mad that I couldn't get to the Miami Northwestern Palmetto game last week. I wanted to, you know, you said on 247 that you were very impressed with Leonard Taylor. I wanted to ask you about Romillo Brinson because I feel like, you know, a lot of people know him just because he's a big wide receiver name in Miami. What have you thought about him after seeing him a few times, especially when he was matched up against Jason Marshall? How did you come away, you know, think about Romello Brinson as a receiver?
Yeah, I think Romello Brinson is a guy that, you know, he can definitely create separation. And that's one thing that you definitely notice. Like he's a guy that can get off a press, and he's just long, you know, he's got really long arms, really long legs, really long strides. And you definitely see like the intrigue with him. You can definitely see how he could, like why he's regarded by Miami the way that he is and why Georgia and Texas A&M and programs like that we're so interested in him. And like what we mentioned earlier, you know, like this is a passing league, like this is a passing game. Like you need guys that are going to be able to get open, are going to be able to create separation. And yeah, like Mark, what you were kind of alluding to, he went up against Jason Marshall, and you know, you saw the you saw the videos on Twitter. Like, you know, he was able to create that separation. Like he wasn't like, you know, he was able to get off of Jason Marshall. And you know, Jason, you say what you want about Jason Marshall, but that's a very, very legitimate prospect. Like you see him in person, and it's like absolutely picture perfect of what like an NFL cornerback is expected to look like at like a legit 6'1", 6'2", really long arms, great ball skills. You know, like that's as good of a corner as anybody in the country is going to play on a Friday night. And I thought Romello Brinson more than held his own. You know, he made a play as well over the top off, you know, one-on-one coverage. Basically it was him and Corey Collier, the Florida commit out of Palmetto, and he made a play over him as well. And even the week before that, you know, I saw Northwestern at IMG, and, you know, he went up against – he was matched up a little bit with Markevious Brown and then mostly the 2022 top 24/7 cornerback Dalen Everett, who's a really long kid. Like, this is a kid that you guys are going to know at some point next cycle because, like, this is, just a beautiful-looking cornerback prospect, just like everything you kind of want. And, you know, he made some things happen against him too, so – I definitely like Romeo Brinson. I definitely like what he brings to the table. I think that he's just like a, you know, just a big bodied receiver that can go up, grab the ball, you know, just gives you just a long catch radius, you know, just a lot of different things that he kind of does well that will definitely complement what Miami's trying to do on offense.
Okay, perfect. And then one more guy I wanted to ask. I heard that, you know, this guy played really well in that game as well. Cam Kitchens, one of my favorite commits of this class. Have you been impressed watching him this year?
Yeah, I mean, Cam Kitchens is a guy that he's been doing it at a high level for a long time down here in Dade County. You know, like, this is a kid that had like 9 interceptions as a junior last year. I think he had 5 the year before that as a sophomore. Is a 3-year starter on a Northwestern team that's looking to win their 4th straight state title this year. And one thing that really stands out to me about Cam is like his leadership. You know, I spoke to him after the Palmetto game, and you just kind of see his demeanor and the way that he just like kind of carries himself. It's one of those things that you could see that like just transitioning really well. Like I could see him, you know, how they kind of talked about how Gilbert Frierson got up like in the middle of the NC State game or at halftime of the State game and like was delivering that speech. Like I could see like Cam Kitchens and honestly a couple other guys in this class kind of being the ones that step up and kind of take on that role. I just think he's a very confident kid. And yeah, I definitely like his ball skills. I also think he has, like, he's very versatile, you know, and that's a lot of what Manny Diaz and these guys have kind of talked about this defense. It's almost like positionless, you know, like basketball, where you want guys that are able to do a couple different things well. And I think Cam Kitchens has like the body type at 5'11", 205 to potentially play in the box at the next level, but he also has the ball skills of a safety. So, you know, like he and then you could also leave him at safety because he has the speed and, you know, the ability to play there as well. So I just think it's one of those things where Miami's kind of starting to bring in those types of guys that are really going to fit what they're trying to do right now on defense that they might not have the exact perfect personnel for. But I think there's definitely a few guys, including Kitchens, on the way that are going to kind of help make their job maybe a little bit easier on the defensive side of the ball.
So I want to ask you about that safeties room because, you know, that's kind of where we're collecting most of our recruiting talent right now. You know, we already have the safety that we got this year that is out for the year.
Williams?
Yes. We got Avante Williams. We have James Williams committed. We have Cam Kitchens committed. You know, but then at like the corner position, we're kind of lacking that elite talent. How do you think the depth chart is going to shake out? Do you think any of those guys move positions when they come in, or do you think that they're just going to compete at the safety spot?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely going to be something interesting to monitor. I wish I was on Green Tree more as like a normal year I would be to kind of be able to see who's taking reps where and maybe get a better idea if there's someone that's maybe getting some work in at a different position. But I think it's hard, you know, because like I feel like they did recruit a lot of like almost like true safeties. You know, I'm not sure how much Brian Balaam could transition to corner. Maybe Jalen Harrell, but I feel like, you know, at 6'2", you know, 220 something pounds, probably. I feel like Jalen Harrell's probably maybe not the ideal candidate from a speed standpoint to play corner, but maybe he is. Like I wish I was yeah, there more to be able to like kind of see that, because I feel like there might have to be some of that stuff going on, because I feel like Miami's really like an injury or two away from really, really having to figure it out at that spot. So I really do wonder what the kind of the backup plan is there. Again, this is just one of those things where the pandemic definitely doesn't help us kind of get an idea or kind of project forward with those types of things. But, you know, with the type of athletes that they're bringing in, you know, you would think that maybe like even like an Avante Williams type could potentially play some corner at 5'11", or, you know, one of those types of guys can come in and, you know, cover a guy if they really, really needed to. But yeah, it'll definitely be something to watch. And honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if they had something like that kind of in the works behind the scenes.
Well, and so my last recruiting question for you, Gabby, is James Williams. I know you've seen him play live this year at the Heritage St. Thomas game, I believe. But how – because he looks like a linebacker and maybe a defensive end. What – you know, how good – really is he? Because he's a freak. And also, you know, a lot of people, you know, they investigate social media a little, you know, a little too much, and they think that James Williams, you know, could, you know, possibly be a flip candidate. Do you kind of see that, or do you see him pretty locked in with Miami?
Yeah, well, starting on that back end, I mean, I see him pretty locked in with Miami. I'm actually going to go see him tonight because they're starting their playoff journey tonight. So I'm going to head up to Plantation in a few and go watch James Williams, Marvin Jones Jr., the top 24/7 junior pass rusher, Earl Little, a couple guys over there. So I'm gonna go watch him again tonight. But I think James Williams is kind of like what you just said, Marsh. Like he's a little bit of everything. And again, like that's what Miami wants. Miami wants a guy like, yeah, James Williams could be a quote unquote safety, but you can also line him up at the as a pass rusher. You can kind of put him at the, you can bring him to the line of scrimmage and have him go get the quarterback, and he'll be able to do that. And then you can have him play a little bit of like almost like linebacker, striker-ish, and he's going to be able to, you know, hang with a tight end or go cover a running back or whatever you need him to do, or go get the quarterback. Like, I just think James Williams is just one of those like freaky type of athletes where it's just like they don't come across very often. And once you have them in your system, like you kind of got to like, you just have to, it just makes, again, like just makes your job so much easier because you know you have a guy that's going to be able to do all those things right. You know, I think he's a freaky player. I saw him against Chaminade earlier this year, and he was just all over the place. Like people would kind of knock him on his like, oh, he's not such a physical guy. He looked really, really physical that day. Just watching the St. Thomas Aquinas Heritage game on TV, he looked really physical in that game as well. He delivered a few blows. And, you know, I think this is a kid that's going to come in and potentially change the way that Miami plays defense, the same way with Leonard Taylor, same way with a few other guys in this class, Chase Smith. I think Miami's finally starting to kind of bring in those types of guys that are really, really going to help them kind of take that defense to the next level.
Awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. Okay. So well, quickly, go ahead.
No, you're fine. I just have one quick recruiting question. You know, and you can give any kind of caveat that you want with this, Gabby. But you know, if I was to tell you that we were going to get a high caliber flip on signing day and you had to pick somebody, who do you think it is? It's going to flip to us.
Okay. I mean, I think the easy answer, I'm not going to bail myself out though. I'll give you something juicier, but I think the easy answer is probably Jake Garcia. Okay. But I'm not going to do that. Again, since you're bailing me out with a caveat, Jordan, I will say that he's said absolutely nothing to make me think otherwise. But I will say that Jason Marshall has told me in the past that the only school that he's communicating with other than Florida is Miami. And, you know, right up until he actually committed to Florida, I think the 24/7 crystal ball was all orange and green because there was pretty good. There was a pretty good feeling that, you know, that Miami made a really late push, and they did. And that a lot of people were feeling like Miami could have ended up being the pick there. What happened there at the end is still a little blurry, but, you know, Miami, not even Alabama, he mentions. He's told me and he's told Andrew Ivins on two separate occasions that Miami is the program that's still kind of texting him here and there. He's still talking to him here and there. And then again, he has Breshard Smith, Savion Collins, and Leonard Taylor that are all committed to Miami at the school. So it wouldn't hurt if maybe Florida kind of somehow found a way to lose that game against Georgia, maybe lose a couple other games and get him really thinking if Miami keeps winning. But honestly, I think Florida playing the way they are right now, I think that definitely helps. Not that they needed much help with him anyways, but I'll go ahead and just shot in the dark. I'll just give you guys maybe a potential Jason Marshall.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. I know people are going to run with that when they listen.
Yeah, don't. Absolutely don't. Don't at all. This is pure hypothetical.
So quickly, just talking about tomorrow's game, Virginia Tech, Miami, noon kickoff. Miami is the underdog up against Virginia Tech, and I think Kirk Herbstreit put us on upset watch. I'm concerned about this game. What are you feeling?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like you're always concerned when you go to Virginia Tech. You know, obviously it's a really tough place to play. You know, Lane Stadium isn't going to be, you know, whatever amount of, what is it, 85-something thousand people deep with Enter Sandman blaring through when they walk in. It's not going to be like that hostile environment. But I think at the end of the day, you still have to understand that this is a Virginia Tech team that does a lot of things well that Miami doesn't necessarily protect well. For example, they run the ball with the best of them in the country. You know, Khalil Herbert, yeah, he's dealing with like a lingering hamstring. But, you know, this is the fourth leading rusher. Javion Hawkins is one spot ahead of him. And we kind of saw what Javion Hawkins did to Miami for Louisville early in the season. It was really honest. Miami had a pretty tough time stopping the run there. And you just kind of seen the way Miami's kind of dealt with the run over the last few weeks. And, you know, and then you got to throw in the Hendon Hooker thing. And, you know, this is a big bodied kid, ran for like 156 yards last week. And, you know, so, you know, Miami's, I feel like, traditionally struggled with the dual threat quarterback. He obviously got a win over us last year in his first career start. So I think Hendon Hooker's a real, real threat, but they definitely want to run the ball. They also got a high quality offensive line. So that's going to be kind of strength on strength since, you know, I would say the strength of Miami's defense is that defensive line with Jalen Phillips, Jared Harrison Hunt, Nesta, and then Quincy Roche. But, you know, they have the second highest graded offensive line in the country behind only Notre Dame. And their left tackle is one of the top left tackles. I think he's one of only two tackles in the whole country with a grade of 90 plus in both run blocking and pass blocking, according to Pro Football Focus. So he's definitely a good one. And then Brock Hoffman, the Coastal Carolina transfer, you know, I was talking to Matei Sis from the Virginia Tech side, and he said the whole offensive line has kind of taken his identity, just kind of like a crap talker, kind of get in your face, call you out on social media type of dude. So that offensive line is definitely strong combined with that run game. I think it could get interesting, but I really do think Miami's just a flat out, just more like just a better team. I think a lot of things Miami does well in offense, it's vice versa. You know, like I think Virginia Tech struggles to stop a lot of what Miami does well. Really just a really, really poor rushing defense. Miami's rushing game obviously hasn't been great, but De'Aaron King obviously coming on in the last few weeks, especially last week, I think that could be a real problem. I think it could be one of those games where you see Cam Harris, Jalen Phillips, Don Chaney have opportunities to kind of, you know, really just break back into this and kind of get back into the rhythm that they found early on in the season. And then obviously with the receivers playing well, Mike Harley playing that well, that's always a threat. So the teams are definitely going to have to be accountable for that as well, especially with Mark Pope, D. Wiggins. When those guys are playing well, it definitely opens things up for the Miami offense like we saw against NC State. So, you know, I do understand Miami being the underdog. I'm not sure how you can call it an upset still if you're telling the world that they're the underdogs and then call it an upset. I get the rankings and all that stuff, but whatever, it is what it is. But I do think Miami comes out with a win. I think that this is a kind of like a statement game for Miami. This is kind of like we're not the team. We're not the defense we were last week. I think there's definitely avenues for Miami to come out of this alive. And, you know, this is a team that's kind of found a way to do it. You know, people say they've been winning ugly, but you know, an ugly win is better than a pretty loss. So I'll take those all day. And at the end of the day, I think Miami just cares about getting that W next to their name on the scoreboard. And I really think that Miami finds a way to pull it out tomorrow. It's not going to be easy, but I think they find a way to pull it out.
Yeah. And so I want to ask you about Brevin Jordan. You know, he's been out the last few games. Do you think we see him tomorrow, or do you kind of see more him shutting down for the rest of the year and, you know, probably preparing himself to declare early?
Yeah, that's I don't know. I feel like everything Manny Diaz has kind of said is that he is healthy, and what healthy means in 2020 is honestly just a toss-up, because there's two different ways I guess that could really go. You know, I would hope that Brevin Jordan's healthy. If he's not, I and this isn't a knock against Brevin, I really think that this Miami offense will be okay regardless, just because I think Will Mallory still brings a lot to the table. And I think that we're kind of starting to see that Will Mallory that, you know, we've kind of talked about through springs and summers and all that stuff in years past, that we're always like, Will Mallory could be the breakout guy. Will Mallory could be the breakout guy. Like, this kid's super talented. And I think we're kind of starting to see flashes of that. And I think that no matter what, whether Brevin plays or doesn't, I guess there's no real way of me to know, since Miami kind of keeps that close to the vest until an hour before game time. I still think Will Mallory could be a guy in this offense that really helps Miami and still causes, you know, a matchup problem for whatever defense is going up against him.
Yeah. And it sucks because we've seen what Brevin can do, you know, what he did the first three games, and we know how elite of a talent he really is. But it's also, you know, with Will Mallory playing well, it's kind of like, you don't pick up right where you left off, but you pick up pretty close. Do you see – my last question for you, Gabby, is do you think the running game gets back on track tomorrow? Because, you know, Cam Harris just hasn't really been able to do much. And I also, do you think with the lack of running game, do you think that has more to do with, you know, running backs not seeing their holes or more so, you know, the offensive line just not being able to get a push?
Yeah, I think that the running game definitely does get I think it does open up tomorrow. I just think, like, statistically, Virginia Tech hasn't just been able to do it well. I think there's a couple reasons why maybe the run game's kind of shut down, and I think a lot of that has to do with De'Aaron King. Like, you know, a lot of teams are just daring him to beat him with the arm. Like, the people are just saying, if De'Aaron King's going to beat us, it's not going to be on the ground. So that has had teams just in general focused on Miami's run game. And then you saw how Miami was kind of running the ball early in the year against UAB. They had the big runs against UAB. Big runs against Louisville, you know, like early on, they're really just running the ball very, very well. And then, you know, it kind of just stopped because I feel like teams just kind of started like that. This is Miami's identity on offense. This is what they're trying to do. We're going to stop that. And now that De'Aaron King is kind of passing the ball well, like, are you going to really let De'Aaron King throw for 430 and 5 touchdowns on you? Because he obviously can. So it's going to be going to be interesting to see how defenses kind of adjust to the fact that De'Aaron King is proving that he can absolutely beat you, and that Miami's receivers have proved that they could absolutely beat you. And if teams are just going to kind of sell out to stop the run, or if they're going to have to kind of show that respect now to King and be like, okay, we kind of have to worry about this as well. And I think if they do, which I would expect they would, I think that definitely opens up space in the running game for both King, for Harris, for Jalen, for Don, I think for all of them. I'm not sure if you can even call anybody a running back one for Miami anymore. I think you can almost officially say this is a by committee approach. Like, we're like the Detroit Lions of college football with like six running backs. And yeah, man, I think that's definitely going to be the kind of approach if I'm kind of reading all this correctly. And if what my eyes are telling me on Saturdays is kind of true, you know, if it holds true or not.
Okay, man. Well, last thing I want from you is a score prediction for the game tomorrow.
Yeah, it's good. I actually have to get this done, so I have to send this over to David, who does our predictions every week. You know, I think Miami scores the ball. I really think that, you know, I would definitely say Miami has a better offense than Liberty. I do think Malik Willis is a good talent, but that's still a 38-point performance to a team within your state that probably shouldn't be on the same field as you from a recruiting standpoint. I think Miami can get into the high 30s. I'm not sure if Khalil Herbert is healthy, and even if he is, those hamstring injuries are definitely linger. I'm gonna go 38-27, something like that. I think Miami wins by at least a touchdown, but I do think this game is gonna be tight for a lot of it. I think Miami kind of finds a way, like late third quarter, fourth quarter, to kind of just pull away, whether that's turnover, whether that's just getting a big stop or whatever it is. I think that Miami just kind of pulls it out near the end of the game.
Perfect. Perfect. All right, man. Well, as always, we thank you so much for coming on, and I promise we're going to link up here soon, man.
Yeah, absolutely, man.
We're close now, man. I'm here. So
relatively close. We're still like, you're definitely closer than being in Utah.
Exactly. Oh, bro, I driving in Miami yesterday was hell.
Driving in Miami is no fun, man. No fun.
But yeah, tell Callie we say hi, and yeah, thank you for coming on, and I'll hit you up here in the next few days, brother.
Absolutely, guys. Appreciate it. Jordan, take care, man.
Thanks, Gabby. Appreciate having you guys.
All right.
Bye. Cool, man. It's always good to have Inia Rudia on the podcast.
Exactly. Yeah, he's great. Hey, well, before we go, we need to give our score predictions.
Yeah, man. Do you want to go first or do you want me to?
You go first. I'm still deciding.
Okay, so I'm going to agree with Kirk Herbstreit and say that we are on upset watch. I am not going to predict a loss, though, but I'm going to say 48-44 Miami Hurricanes.
Ooh, high scoring.
Dude, it's going to be the same type of thing as last week, where we are all going to have, like, our hair falling out by the end of the game because we will be so mad at the defense. Like, that's what I'm predicting.
Yeah, I feel you on that. Okay, brace yourselves. I'm saying Miami 27, Virginia Tech 31.
I am
nervous about tomorrow's game. I never like playing Virginia Tech. I think this is the game where that bend don't break, and I just think that we get down in the third quarter and we just can't punch it in the red zone. So I predict a loss, man.
Okay, well, you know, I don't blame you there, honestly. I think this is – people are kind of writing it off because Virginia Tech has a bad defense, but –
But the thing is, like, none of that stuff matters when Miami plays.
Yeah.
Like, when we played Virginia, they were 1-3 and a horrible, you know, they were just getting blown off the doors, and we only scored 19 points on them. So hopefully last week's game was a turning point, like I said, but I still think that we struggle and we drop it tomorrow.
Well, I mean, we're having third string quarterbacks. We're having, you know, freshman quarterbacks. We're having quarterbacks that wear the number 36 just do all kinds of stuff to us, man. So, I mean, I'm with you. Like, whatever. You know, like, I don't have a lot of confidence. I mean, to give our defense credit, they seem to make timely plays. You know, like for instance, locking down NC State, you know, getting that pick late. So, I mean, they are being opportunistic and making the right play at the right time. But, I mean, how many times in a row can you capture lightning in a bottle, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, you can't just keep living on the edge, man.
Like, yeah, agreed.
One, sooner or later, it's not going to turn out in your favor.
Yeah, I mean, 2013 and 2017 should show us that exact same thing, is that if you live on the edge, like, you're going down.
You live by the edge, you die by the edge.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, this might be the week. This is the most upsetty type game that I feel like we've had so far this year.
Yeah.
You know, I'm hoping that it looks – I mean, I'm hoping that it looks like last week, but Derek King, like, morphed into a deity and put up 500 yards and 4 touchdowns. So,
a deity.
Yeah. I mean, who knows if he's going to do that again? Like, is he capable? Yes. But, I mean, is that what people do every week?
He shouldn't have to throw for 430 yards every week in order for us to win by 3 points.
Exactly. And, I mean, you know, like, Virginia Tech's offense is much better than NC State's, and their defense is roughly the same. So it's just going to be a more intense shootout.
Yeah.
So.
Oh God. Well, this reaction show could be fun.
Right?
Well, I'm going to be, I hope you're jealous, because tomorrow I'll be watching the game with our friend Petrie.
Oh, nice. That should be way fun, man.
Yeah, we're gonna go get rowdy. So
nice. We'll send Petrie my best, and you know, tell him that I'm a big fan of what he does. He seems like a good dude, and I always enjoy talking to him. So
you need to come out here whenever you can. So
I'm trying to get some stuff in the works. I'll text you about it. But we'll see.
Perfect. All right. Is there anything else?
No, man. Just go Canes.
Yeah, man, go Canes. Please get a W tomorrow. We love you all, and just go Canes, please.
Go Canes. Yep.